Cymric Wanderings from Prehistoric London by E.O. Gordon. Within the last half century, entirely a new light has been thrown upon the prehistoric history of London and its mounds by Schliemann's discoveries at Hissarlik, the ancient Troy, in the northwest of Asia Minor. No longer need the story be regarded as fabulous, that Brutus the Trojan, the grandson of Innes, the hero of Virgil's great epic, gave the name of Car Troia, Troynovant, or New Troy, to London. In site and surroundings, as we have already stated, there seems to have been considerable resemblance between the historic Troy on the Scamander and the New Troy on the Thames. On the plains of Troy today may be seen numerous conical mounds arising from out the lagoons and swamps that environed the citadel hill of Hissarlik, akin to those that dominated the marshes round about the Car and the Porth of London in prehistoric times. Saichi's researches, moreover, prove the Trojans and the Cymry to have been of the same stock. In his preface to Schliemann's Ilios, the professor writes, quote, "Thanks to the discoveries in unearthing the remains of Ilium, we know who the Trojans originally were, that they belonged to the Aryan race, speaking a dialect that belonged to the Aryan family, so that we, as well as the Greeks of the age of Agamemnon, can hail the subjects of Priam, king of Troy, as brethren in blood and speech." Close quote. Nor is material evidence lacking of a kinship between the Cymry of the Troad and the Cymric settlers in Britain in the religious symbols of their primitive worship. Schliemann discovered in the lowest digging of Troy terracotta whorls incised with the hierogram of the deity, the three rays or rods of light, a symbol of the Arwen, the holy wings or the Holy Spirit, from remote ages to the present, the badge of the Druidic Gorset. In the same diggings, numerous other whorls have been found incised with the swastika, in Sanskrit meaning an auspicious mark, derived from svasti, well, and as to be. A symbol of the sun, perhaps of the vernal sun, as opposed to the autumnal, therefore a natural symbol of light, life, health, and wealth. These Hissarlik whorls lend additional interest to the beautiful enamelled swastika devices on the late Celtic bronze shield in the British Museum, found in the Thames near Battersea, and point to Trojan and Eastern influence in this gem of British art and craft. A triangular variant of swastika appears upon several of the ancient Cornish crosses. But as modern authorities regard the story of Brutus, the reputed founder of London, as fabulous, before we examine the evidence that survives to the present day of the personality of the Trojan prince, it will help us to realise the possibility of the truth of the tradition if we first glance at the account of the colonisation of the Isle of Britain, gathered principally from the Triads and the Druidic remains collected by the eminent Welsh scholar and bard, Reverend R. W. Morgan. In this ancient literature, concerning the primitive migrations of the Cymry is one of the oldest recorded traditions of the flood. Long before the Cymry came into Britain, the Llynllion, or Great Deep, literally the abyss of waters, broke up and inundated the whole earth. The island, otherwise known as Britain, shared the general catastrophe. One vessel floated over the waters. This was the ship of Nevid Navnevion. In it were two individuals preserved, Duivan, the man of God, and Duivach, the woman of God. By the posterity of these two, the earth gradually repeopled. The ship of Nefyd nav Nevion was built in Britain and was one of its three mighty works. For a long time after the subsiding of the deluge, the Cymry dwelt in the summerland between the Sea of Afes and Defrabani. The land being exposed to sea floods, they resolved under the guidance of Hugadarm to seek again the White Island of the West, where their father, Duivan, had built the ship of Nefyd nav Nevion. They journeyed westward towards the setting sun, being many in number, and men of great heart and strength, mighty ones, giants. They came in sight of the Alps, and then part of their migration diverged southwards. These are the Cymry of Italy. The others, consisting of the three tribes of the Cymry, the Briton and the Hlogris, crossed the Alps. Along either side of the Alps, near the sea, part of the Logris settled. These are the Ligurians of Italy and Gaul. Pursuing their course still further, they crossed the river of Eddies, the slow river, the rough river, the bright river, the Rhone, the Arar, the Garonne, and the Loire, till they reached Guasguin, or Gascony, the Vineland. Thence they turned northwards, and part of the Briton settled in a land they named Clidor Arimorica, the land or expansion on the upper sea Armorica. The Cymry still held onwards until they saw the cliffs of the White Island. They then built ships, and in them passed over the hazy ocean and took possession of the island, and they found no living creature on it but bisons, elks, bears, beavers, and water monsters. And they took possession of it, not by war, nor by conquest, nor by oppression, but by right of man over nature. And they sent to the Britons in Clidor, and to the Hlogris on the continent, and to as many as came, they gave the east and the north of the island, and the Cymry dwelt in the west. These three tribes were of one race, origin, and speech. These are the three Pacific tribes of the Isle of Britain, because they came in mutual goodwill, peace, and love, and over them reigned Hugh the Mighty, the one rightful sovereign of the island. And they called the island the White Island, Innisfen, and the Island of the Mighty Ones. Its name, Britain or Peridane, was not yet known. This account is a very striking one. The date precedes, by many centuries, the earliest traditions of Greece and Rome. Its statements are in entire accordance with the results of the most recent investigations into the origin of languages and nations. All the most ancient writers of Greece and Rome concur in stating that the Cymry, or Gomeridae, were under appellations slightly varied, the primogenital, or oldest family in the world. Along their first habitation, the shores of the Euxine and the Sea of Azov, they were known as Cymry or Cymeroi. The peninsula, which formed part of their dominions, retains their name, Cymria, corrupted into Crimea. South of the Caucasian range, they were called Gomri. Many of the most important positions in Armenia and around the Caucasus retain their primitive Cymric names. Gomri, the chief fortress and headquarters of the Russian forces. Van, the peak. Erivan, on the peak which Erivan is. Kars, the stone fort. Trebizond, Trasiguntum, the lower town, etc. A trivial detail, but one which surely shows kinship with the Cymry of the Caucasus, is the tradition that the art of making Cornish cream is practiced only here and in Cornwall. So also, the great natural features of Europe retain the names assigned by the Cymry when they first penetrated the uninhabited forests and the silent plains. Alp in Cymric is the rocky mount, Apennines, the heads, Cevennes, the backs or ridges, Pyrenees, the spires, the Don, the nave, Tagus, the stream, Loire, the bright river, Pool or Huel, the marsh, Rhen or Rhine, the flooding river. At Treves, or Trier, the capital of Belgic Gaul, which comprised not only Gaul proper so called, but the whole of Spain and Britain, most interesting material evidence of one of the earliest migrations of the Cymry is to be found. On the walls of the Rowe's house, formerly the Rathhouse, a Latin inscription states that the town was founded by Tribeta, son of Linus, king of Assyria, and that Treves was built before Rome. Anti-Roman Treveri statet annis MCCC. The Gesta Treverum makes its history go back to the same founder. In further confirmation of this statement is the Petrusberg, the mountain of stone, and the same Gesta gives its old designation as the Mons Geranus or Gerano, which suggests the probability that, like the Tunwald and other British mounds, it was a seat of justice. It is a prehistoric circular mound, strikingly like one of our own British sacred mounds. Originally, this mound was probably surmounted by a menhir, which acted in the same way as the index, or gnomon, of a sundial. It was this writer's good fortune to see the sharp shadow of the solitary tree on the summit cast directly down the slopes of this mound of unknown antiquity, as the great bell of the Domkirche of St. Peter and St. Helen boomed the hour of noon. An object lesson which showed the value of Cotsworth's practical experiments on the summit of Silbury Hill in order to verify his conviction that, like the pyramids of Egypt, the Cluder Keverangon had been constructed by the astronomer priests on astronomical lines. Treves is more closely connected with our early British monarchs than any other continental town, from its having been the favourite residence of the Queen Empress Helena, who founded here the first Christian church in Germany. The basilica of the palace of her husband, Constantine Chlorus, forms the actual walls of the present cathedral. From her gifts of one of the nails of the cross, of the holy coat, and other relics, the name of King Cole's beautiful and accomplished daughter, Elaine, is held in the greatest veneration as a patroness of the city. And it is of no little interest to find that the ruins of the imperial palace of Treves, built by her son Constantine, bear so strong a resemblance to similar ruins in Colchester that postcards of the one may easily be taken for those of the other. The Crimean War in the 50s of the last century afforded exceptional opportunity for comparing the present aspect of the Caucasian Cambria, or Crimea, with that handed down in the old British traditions. It is still what the latter describes it as being 3,500 years ago. The east of it, covered by salt lagoons, a large portion occupied by the Sivash, or Putrid Sea, the rest composed of spits, reefs, and sandbanks. The southern part, which they called the Summerland, is now known to richly merit the title. It is the Naples of the Russian Empire. In the battles of the Alma and Inkerman, and in the assaults on Sebastopol, more than 80,000 British Cymry in different regiments were engaged. It is a fact unparalleled in history that the descendants of a race which emigrated 33 centuries since should thus return to fight in the sacred cause of justice and civilization to the cradle of their ancestors in the remote East, preserving the same language, the same freshness of life, the same indomitable spirit and endurance, the same innate attachment to liberty. Such an extraordinary instance of vitality in a nation appears to justify the faith of the Cymry in their popular proverb, Tramor terra Briton, as long as there is sea, so long will there be Britons. Geology enables us to determine that at the period of the Crimean colonization of Britain, not more than half of it was inhabitable. The eastern parts, the lands adjoining the great estuaries of the Thames, the Mersey, the Humber, Trent, the Fen countries, were either submerged or mud swamps. Many centuries elapsed before they became fit to support human life. The districts first settled were consequently the mountainous regions of the west and the elevated plateaus of the north and the south. Hence, in Devonshire, Cornwall, Wales, Cumberland, and the east of Scotland are found the earliest works of man's hands in Britain, the circles, mounds, tumuli, and cairns, or fortified enclosures, of the three Pacific tribes. The patrimony of inheritance of the elder tribe, or Cymry, lay between the Severn and the sea. That of the Logrians extended from Kent to Cornwall, and that of the Britons stretched from the Humber northwards. The Cymry, gradually enlarging their bounds, colonised the northwest of the Isle and the east of Albion or Scotland. These latter became known to the Romans as the Picts. All the names of the Pict kings, as of the rivers, the mountains, etc., in Pictland, are Cymric. The monarchic and military supremacy was vested in the Cymry. Strictly speaking, there appear to have been no laws, but the three tribes regulating their affairs by certain usages, which afterwards were called the usages of Britain, and formed the foundations of its subsequent codes of law. The whole island was considered to be under one crown, the crown itself subject to the voice of the country. Hence the maxim, the country is higher than the king, which runs through the ancient British laws and was directly opposed to the feudal system in which the country itself was dealt with as the property of the king. The Cymric language prevailed in different dialects over the whole of Europe and a large part of Asia. It is the substructure of all the Celtic tongues and the archaic element in the Greek, the Latin, the Sanskrit, and the hieroglyphic Egyptian. It is the key to the affinity between the languages of the East and the West. All other languages can be traced to an alien source, and this alone cannot. It is certain that it was brought by the Cymry into Britain, as it was spoken by their forefathers in Armenia, 1700 BC, and that its purity and integrity have been guarded by them in all ages with jealous care. It is the witness, alike above suspicion and corruption, to the extreme antiquity of their nationality and their civilization. The three Pacific tribes remained undisturbed in the enjoyment of their several patrimonies in Britain for five centuries. A second colonization then took place on the breaking up of the Trojan Empire in the east. The Empire of Troy, its kings and people, were of the same race and language as the Umbri of Italy and Britain. Hence, on its dissolution, part of the survivors directed their course to the former, part to the latter country. Troy was regarded as the sacred city of the race in the east. The only two national names acknowledged by the ancient Britons are Cymry and Ilin Troia, the race of Troy. There seems no sufficient reason, therefore, to doubt the traditional story that Brutus, having accidentally killed his father in the chase and being ordered by his grandfather Innes to quit Italy, assembled 3,000 of the bravest youths of Umbria and, putting himself at their head, sailed to his countrymen in Greece. A series of victories on the Trojan side resulted in peace. Pandrasus giving his daughter Imogene in marriage to Brutus, but finding that a Trojan kingdom could not be established in Albania, afterwards called Epirus, except at the cost of incessant hostilities, Brutus emigrated with all his people to the main stock of his race, the White Island. Drayton, the Elizabethan poet, gives an account of the wanderings of Innes after the destruction of Troy and relates the expulsion of Brutus from Italy and his ultimate arrival. Isle of Albion, highly blessed, with giants lately stored, where from the stock of Troy those puissant kings should rise.